Welcome to the OutVenture Podcast. We celebrate the incredible stories of Black individuals redefining the outdoors, highlighting those breaking the mold while finding joy and freedom in nature. Each episode features inspiring guests who share their journeys from hiking to camping. We explore it all. Join us as we uplift voices often unheard in the outdoor community. Let's embrace the beauty of the great outdoors together.
Hey guys, and welcome back to OutVenture Podcast. I'm your host, Brandy Samples. And on today's episode, we are talking about traveling on a budget. But first, don't forget to support the channel by liking, commenting, and subscribing. It's a small gesture, but it helps us bring new adventures your way. So let's dive into the topic that resonates with so many of us today in this economy, which is budget travel. We all know that the typical advice that's often given caters typically towards families who can actually afford to travel, but are just looking to save a few bucks. But what about the families who truly need to stretch their dollars? In this episode, we'll explore more practical tips that can help you and your family embark on exciting adventures without the financial stress. So let's get into it. One of the absolute best options for affordable travel is traveling during off-peak seasons. This can save you a significant amount of money on flights and accommodations, and also tickets in most cases are a lot cheaper. Research the best times to visit your desired destinations. One of the absolute best options for affordable traveling is going during off-peak seasons. This can save you a significant amount of money on flights and accommodations. Research the best times to visit your desired locations when prices are lower and the crowds are a lot thinner. This may not only help your wallet, but also allows you to have a more enjoyable experience as you explore without the hustle and bustle of the typical crowds that come on the peak seasons. Now, this strategy typically does not work if you have kids and you are confined, like me, to the school's calendar. Although it's still worth checking, what you can do is try to work around it. There are a lot of schools across the US country that do not have the same breaks at the same time. For example, almost all states offer spring break between March and April. Because this also includes most colleges and universities, traveling during these months are typically more expensive. So you ask yourself, well, Brandy, that's the only time I have. Now what? So let's work under the assumption that you can only travel with your kid's schedule during March and April, and this is the only time that you can get off from work. So let's talk about the tips and the hacks that you could use to work your budget around the busy seasons. So what we'll do first is we will explore budget-friendly accommodations. When it comes to traveling on a tight budget, finding affordable lodging is absolutely crucial. Fortunately, there's plenty of options that can cater to budget-conscious travelers without sacrificing comfort or experience. Some of the best choices are hostels, guest houses, budget hotels, and my personal favorite, which are campsites. So let's dive into hostels. So I think hostels sometimes get a bad rap, and I will admit that years ago, I was one of the people who was guilty of giving it a bad rap. I just hadn't had the time to explore them, and I think I thought that they were just like party havens and, you know, just full of like unkempt tippies or whatever, so I had no interest. But over the years, hostels have come a really long way, and a lot of them have been taken over by commercial companies, and they are actually focusing more on the family. So they're a popular choice among budget travelers, especially young adventurers, backpackers, as we all know. But like I said, over the recent years, they have had a growing appeal to families and are starting to become corporately owned for the most part. Here's a bit about hostels and why they might be perfect for you and your family. They are cost effective. They are typically arranged in a dormitory style accommodation, which can significantly reduce the lodging cost. A lot of them now do offer private family rooms, and they're going to be a little bit of a higher price for the private family rooms, but definitely a lot cheaper than if you were trying to book your entire family into, like, say, a Hilton or a Marriott. There's a social atmosphere to hostels that I actually do like. They have more of a communal vibe. You're more apt to see people traveling from all over the world, a good mix of different cultures. So it's a great place to meet fellow travelers and ask different questions, maybe about the place that you're currently staying or to discover a new place that you may want to go in the future. A lot of hostels have shared facilities. Most come equipped with a shared kitchen that everyone's going to be using to cook, allowing you to prepare your own meals and saving money on dining expenses. There's also going to be common areas, including game rooms or lounges. And this also makes it a little bit more social. I've seen some that have movie theaters in them. You can write books and play games, so that's fun. Some hostels, like I said, offer family rooms, and in the family rooms, they will have most times private bathrooms and showers. And like I said, these typically tend to cost a little bit more, but it is definitely cheaper than going to a mainstream hotel and is worth the stay in most cases. So guest houses are going to be your Vrbo or your Airbnbs. They offer more of an intimate, homey atmosphere compared to the larger hotel chains. And some people find this appealing. They do offer like a personal touch, more of that family home environment that your kids would be used to, or that people who typically do not like hotels would be used to. You can expect a more personalized service. Although prices vary with guest houses, you just have to check the rate. If it's going to be in a more touristy area or more resort styled area, often the fees to me outweigh the need. Just trying to say this nicely, they outweigh the desire for me to stay in a guest house situation. Although there are some workarounds with the fees that I think a lot of people don't try to discover. So if you're traveling during the off-peak seasons, a lot of times you can reach out to the owner of the Airbnb or the Vrbo or any other guest house website and just say, you know, hey, we're traveling in February, you know, no one's coming to the beach right now. Can I get these fees half off, or can you remove the cleaning fee if I, you know, clean the whole thing myself and do a video or something? Just anything that could help you save a few dollars. And all they can say is no, right? But a lot of the times they will kind of work with you, even if they just take, you know, 10 or 15% off of the fees, because if it's out of season, a lot of times the houses may be just sitting unoccupied. So to them, some money is better than no money. So it's always worth the ask. Another advantage to the guest houses is the cultural experience, because staying in the guest houses does give you a little bit of local taste, culture, and lifestyle. Many of the guest houses are located in residential neighborhoods or sometimes right in the city, which is going to allow you to experience the destination from a local's perspective. And this is something that I do absolutely love. And almost all the homes are equipped with kitchens. So you can, again, you can save on having to spend money on breakfast, lunch, and dinner, eating out at restaurants. If you're lucky enough, the guest house may have a pool, which is going to offer you, especially if you're traveling with kids, hours or days even of free entertainment that you can use. So next, your option is going to be a budget hotel. So typically across the US, hotels range from about $100 to $200 a night. So this is a middle of the road hotel. This is going to be like a Hilton Garden Inn or something, Marriott Courtyard, something like that, give or take, depending on which city or which state in the United States that you are trying to go to. Now, don't get me wrong, there are some that are going to be a little bit less than $100, but then that's going to range on the side of the budget hotel that I'm speaking of. So the one thing I do want to say about budget hotels is you never want to sacrifice safety for affordability, okay? So always remember that you need to be staying within your level of comfort zone. And no amount of YouTube videos, no amount of podcasts can tell you and your family what your level of comfortableness is, okay? So do the work, do the research, and figure out if that area is good for you. And also, I don't want to lead this saying, making it seem like all budget hotels are not in good areas. That's definitely not the case. It's just everyone has a different level of comfort, right? And I just want you to seek what your comfort is for your family. So, most budget hotels are typically going to be a little bit away from the attractions, right, of the main reason that you're going to wherever you're going, right? So you're not going to get a Red Roof Inn on the beach, right? Because those are going to be reserved for the higher end hotels. But if you are okay with staying at the budget hotel, then, which is fine, then so say you have to walk a couple of blocks to the beach, or maybe take a shuttle to the beach instead of stepping out of your hotel and being right on the sand. Also, to save money, to me, that's fine. You know, it's not a big deal, but again, each person is different and you find whatever accommodation works best for you and your family. But I would just say do the research and check the hotel's address against multiple websites. I always like to go onto TripAdvisor, which allows guests to upload their own personal pictures and videos. I also search YouTube for walkthroughs of that particular hotel, because 9 out of 10, someone has already stayed there. They have already done a YouTube tutorial or walkthrough of the hotel, the room, the area, the lobby, just showing you their good or bad, their experience at that particular hotel. But that does help because it lets you see the hotel in real time, and it lets you see if this is an accommodation that's going to work for your family. Is it clean? Are there things that are walkable? Are there restaurants nearby? Is there, you know, a Walgreens if you need diapers, or what is around the area that's close by that's not going to cause you to have to travel far to get your needs met? Keeping in mind that budget hotels typically offer essentials, but they're going to be very basic, right? They're not going to have a restaurant on site. The rooms should be clean. You should get private bathrooms, private showers. Sometimes they offer a small continental breakfast, but in most cases, you're not getting anything special. There's no bells and whistles. It's not exciting, but at the bare minimum, it should be clean, right? So if you choose that route, just know that you need to walk into this with a minimum or low expectations, just knowing that the room just needs to be clean, needs to smell good, and you're just sleeping there at night. And make sure the area is safe, right? I like to use sites like booking.com where I can amass a higher level of points, and so I can acquire a higher discount on whichever hotel that I pick. And so I typically I'll search around other sites, but I'll try to keep booking on booking.com so that way, because they do price match. But just so that way I can keep building up my genius points and I can get more and more of a discount off of these rooms that I'm going to pick. So the last option for budget travel is camping. So again, like I said in the beginning, this is one of my favorite options, but because I like camping and my family likes camping. If you are not a camper and you're going on vacation, it might be very scary to use. So check out one of my previous videos on camping and might open up a new world. I hope that you guys do invest in trying something new and getting out there into nature. But for this episode, we will just stick to where you can sleep. So on campsites typically tend to be pretty affordable, especially if you are car camping, or which where you bring everything in your car, you're not having an RV or anything with you, and you're using a tent, which you would own or rent or something like that, or borrow from a friend. They have all the facilities on site for you. So there's showers and there's restrooms and there's running water. A lot of the nicer ones will have washer and dryers. Some of them will have outdoor kitchens. Typically they all come with, or most of them come with like a grill, right? So you can prepare your own food. A lot of them now are trying to be more accommodating. So they'll have like little general stores and all of that things up at the front. They also do have cabins that you can rent, and the cabins will typically just, for the most part, again, it's like a budget hotel kind of atmosphere where you're just having the bare minimum. You got, you know, some bunk beds or queen or twin beds in there, and a lot of them will have like a bathroom or a shower, but some just will have a toilet and some won't have any a toilet at all. You still have to use the public facilities, but it will be a lot cheaper than even staying at a budget hotel, keeping in mind that, again, just like the budget hotel, it typically is going to be a little bit further out and away from the attractions that you are going for, unless you are specifically going there to camp. But it's fun to be out in nature. It's amazing. Kids absolutely love it. And if you have an RV already, or you know someone with an RV that you could borrow, the RV slots are typically very affordable too. And depending on where you are, so I'm not giving prices, because their campsites are typically privately owned unless they're run by the state. If they're run by the state, they are very affordable, but they fill up very fast during peak seasons. So, but if they're privately owned, they're still typically under $100 a night. So it's worth checking if you're going to be in an area where the campsite's not too far and you can just, you know, bring things from home and easily set up there. It's fun. Give it a go. So the next thing that costs the most money while we're traveling is food, right? So eating out on a budget, especially when you are with children or a family or a large group, it doesn't mean that you should be sacrificing flavor for your budget. In fact, some of the best culinary experiences can be found in local eateries and food street stalls. So just do your research, and before you arrive at your destination, spend some time looking into local food blogs, travel forums, and social media platforms. Websites like Yelp, TripAdvisor, and Instagram can provide great insights into popular local spots that won't break the bank. Look for posts that are tagged with the local location, and it also helps you find hidden gems. Also, you can ask locals for accommodations. So say you're staying at this hotel or a campsite, or a lot of times at like Airbnbs, they'll have a little book for you that tells you all the local spots. And so once you're on the ground, don't hesitate to ask the locals what their favorite spot is. So if you stop for gas, you know, just ask the person, hey, what do you have any recommendations where I can find barbecue or, you know, Thai food or something like that? And most people love to give you their opinions on what they think is great. So it may help you and save some money. But you can also ask like the hotel staff. That's a great, because they typically always know. So you can also explore street food markets. So markets are a treasure trove of budget-friendly options. A lot of the times they give you a lot of food, so you can share it amongst each other and just have make your own little tapas situation and just share. But in doing that, you also get to taste the local culture and maybe try some things that you typically wouldn't try when you're out on vacation. One thing that I like to do with my kids is look for lunch specials and then have a big lunch, because everyone knows that it's cheaper to eat lunch than it is to eat dinner. And many restaurants offer lunch specials that are so much more cheaper than dinner. I'm talking half off half the time. So take advantage of these deals and enjoy a really hearty lunch without overspending. Some places even have all you can eat for lunch. Some places even have kids eat free for lunch. So if you eat a big lunch, then you won't have to eat as much for dinner and you can save money there. Food trucks is another option. Because food trucks have been increasingly more and more popular around the world and around the United States, especially, they often serve up delicious meals at a, you know, lower cost than a restaurant. You can follow food trucks on social media for whatever town or city that you're getting into. I personally find that food trucks are expensive. I think it's okay if it's just you, right? Or if it's just you, one other person. But if it's four of you, you know, and you're ordering, I have not found a food truck yet where it's, you know, pretty cheap to order for me and the kids. And, you know, I mean, so a lot of the times if your kids aren't overly picky, then you can get away with sharing the meals. Maybe if you just Google a food truck village and there's just something that you have to try. Or like I said, you can go during lunch if you can, and then eat a big meal there and then share dinner, or eat a big meal and then go to a food truck village and, you know, just split meals, anything to stretch your budget and to help. Also, utilizing apps and websites is a good way to stretch your dollar, because websites are designed to help the travelers find budget-friendly options. You can actually put that into the app with apps like EatWith or Local Eats or even Google Maps. You can type in your budget and then only restaurants that fit your budget will come up or fit your style of cuisine that you're looking for. I also use Groupon, and yes, Groupon is still a thing, but you can go on and buy gift certificates to, I can't think of a restaurant off of hand, but they have a ton of restaurants. Let's say Hibachi. Your family wants Hibachi. So you can go online and purchase a $40 gift certificate for that particular Hibachi restaurant. And that $40 gift certificate is actually really worth $50 or $60 at the restaurant. So I have done this quite a few times, and it has always been a game changer as far as trying to stretch my budget when I'm on vacation. And all of the restaurants, I really do this in Orlando, Florida. If you guys take your kids to Universal or Disney quite often, like I do, then you'll know that you need to stretch every single dollar when you're in Orlando, because it adds up quickly. So I love doing Groupon when I take the boys to theme parks, because, you know, theme park food is crazy expensive and we never eat dinner in the theme parks. And so I'll do this Groupon deal here, leave the park for the night, get our dinner for, you know, $10, $20 difference. And it's just worth it to save the money. One tip here that I learned the hard way is do not activate those tickets for Groupon or gift cards until you're at the restaurant, and let the waitress or the waiter activate it for you. Because once you hit activate or whatever the terminology is, it's almost like you've already used it. So learn that the hard way. Don't do that. Another way to save money on food is going to the grocery store. So this is ideal if you're staying at like camping, or you're staying at a hostel, or like an Airbnb. Anywhere where you have the ability to cook food is always going to be cheaper than buying food out. And I know, you're on vacation, you do not want to cook your own food, but I promise you, it is better to cook your own food. And even if it's just you're cooking a quick breakfast or having cereal or oatmeal for breakfast, and then you're cooking a dinner, right? And then you're eating lunch out to save money. Or you're packing sandwiches with you and then eating out at dinner to save money. If the more meals you can skip at a restaurant, the more money you will have on your souvenirs, or, you know, it'll be one extra adventure that you can do, one extra museum you can get into, or, you know, one extra park you can get into. So it does add up, and you can cook simple things that last either a couple days or just are quick to make, like spaghetti. You can make spaghetti for what, 4 or 5 people for under $50, right? So rice and beans kind of situation. And I'm just telling you to go on vacation and be destitute, right? But any amount helps. And if you're already on a tight budget, but you still want yourself or your children to have the experience of getting out and seeing these things, there's no reason to break the budget just to blow it off eating at restaurants. Especially if it's restaurants, this is controversial, but so I don't like chain restaurants. And if you're going to go on vacation, I just don't really see the point of eating at a restaurant that you had at home, right? So if you're going to go on and take your kids or take yourself on a new adventure, try something new. Try something that you wouldn't eat at your local hometown or your local city, right? I wouldn't go out of my way to go to a Chili's when there's a Chili's on every street corner, right? So just be culturally adventurous, and sometimes the best meals come from trying something new. And don't be afraid to step out of your comfort zones and try foods or dishes that you've never heard of. It might just become your new favorite food. And what is known as, you know, ethnic food in quotation marks, guys, typically you're gonna find is a lot cheaper than going to one of these mainstream restaurants where the food isn't good quality food anyways. So just get out of your comfort zone and try something new and check it out, and you may love it. But just remember to stay flexible. Keep your dining options open and flexible. Sometimes the best food experience come from just being spontaneous and walking past a storefront and, you know, giving it a go and seeing that they make Indian food and it looks and smells delicious, and you go in there and you feed a whole family for $40, you know? So just as long as you are willing to be open and curious, you can find great food that is not going to break the bank. Another thing that I do anytime I'm going anywhere, before I leave, once I make up my mind about where I'm going to go, before I head out to that destination, I always, always, always Google free things to do in blank, right? So free things to do in Nashville, free things to do in New York City. I always do those free things first. I think sometimes people go on vacation and they feel like they gotta get the best of everything. Right? Like, you got to get your Instagram photos, and you got to show people that you're living the high life, or, you know, staying at the Ritz-Carlton. You don't have to do that. And you don't have to feel bad because you're not doing it. I promise you, no one cares. If you're traveling with kids, your kids definitely don't care. So do the free things first. There's so many free options in so many cities, and I will be somewhere and I'll go to like a free museum and it'll be empty. And it's just me and my kids in there having the time of our lives, you know, and no one's there. So take advantage of the free travel options. There are some fantastic free walking tours, museums. You can get discount tickets if you have like a Bank of America card or Citibank, or if you're a teacher, military, student, first responder. I recently just found out through my local library that if you have a library card for that city, then you can get free admission into certain museums. So you just have to ask them. So it's worth the look. But I want to circle back on the walking tours, because I think this is something that people sleep on, and it is one of the best experiences I've ever had in any cities that I've ever traveled around the world. So say you're going to go to Chicago. So you Google free walking tours Chicago. These tours are led by passionate locals who have studied the history of their area, either through just for fun, or they went to school for this and they decided to make this their job because they love what they do. They love people, they love their city, and they just want to share the history with their city. Free walking tours are literally in every city, and they're typically as low as $10 to $20 tip. My only thing is, I would tell you guys, please tip them. This is their job. This is the, even though it's free, and it is free, and you are not obligated to tip them, it's just the right thing to do. And typically, you know, give what you can, but typically between 10 and 20 is good. But it's normally about an hour and a half. I've been on a 2-hour free walking tour just because the group was really energetic and kept asking questions. And the guide was just amazing. This happened in Galveston, Texas. So he was able to tell us about the local history, the different hauntings that were happening around. Just amazing. And sometimes they have information that you're not going to learn about the city if you don't like stop in a museum, or because some people don't like museums, let's be honest. Or if you are just riding around and walking on your own, you wouldn't know, you know, that the Rockefellers used to own this building or whatever. So walking tours are amazing. And again, opt for the free ones and then start going up from there. So I'll just go through my checklist and then I'll say, you know, oh, this park is free, or this museum is free on Wednesdays, right? So I'll change my schedule around to get into that museum for Wednesday. Or local fairs or local festivals, local events that are going on. I'm in Atlanta, and if you guys are in Atlanta or come here quite often, you know that there's literally something every weekend. Right? So most of the times you don't need tickets. You just rock up and you are able to enter the festival, and you can literally spend the entire day there trying foods and seeing shows and musicians. And so that's definitely something that is worth it. And you're on foot, you're seeing the city for free. So take advantage of the museums, the free festivals, the free tours, and definitely use all the discounts you can ask. If you are military, you need to be asking every single time, do you offer military discounts? There's so many people who just, either they've been out of military for so long, they don't think about it anymore, but always ask. It's always worth ask, especially, and also, like I said, teachers, if you have kids with you, students, first responders, just any job that you do, just say, hey, do you offer a discount for this? I'm a welder. Do you offer a discount? Because you never know. I mean, you literally never know. All they can say is no, and you move on. Other things that you can do that are low cost, besides festivals that are open to the public, parks and markets, community events. You can picnic in the park. You can, because some of these cities have the most amazing parks. They are breathtaking and they have water features. And they're in Chattanooga outside of the zoo. Outside of the aquarium. If you guys have been there before, you know they have that huge water area, like right behind the aquarium. And the kids just literally sit there for hours and play in this open water. I mean, it might as well be a water park, and it's literally just a structure that I'm pretty sure nobody technically is supposed to be in, but the city doesn't say anything. So, I mean, things like that, it's just about being spontaneous and willing to adjust your day, right? Because, yeah, you could have paid the money to go to Great Wolf Lodge for the day, or you could have just been walking around Chattanooga and seeing a bunch of kids playing in a huge fountain with, you know, stairs that they've now turned into a slide. And now your kids can play for 2 hours for free while you just sit there and, you know, take videos and hang out. So just never sleep on things like that, and just always be willing to change your schedule and see what's out there. A lot of cities are offering free music concerts, free movie nights, especially if you're in the summer, if you're traveling in the summer. So it's always worth just looking on the local websites and event pages just to see what is going on in that city. Because, I mean, if you're traveling with kids, they don't care, right? They just want to be there. They're just happy that they're somewhere new. And I mean, I also feel this way, but kids definitely, they do not care. So if they're just hanging out in a water feature behind the Chattanooga Aquarium with 20 other kids, they're having just as much fun as if you spent $200 a ticket at Disney. And as an adult, you're thinking, there's no way. But when you see kids having that much fun, you know that it's possible because you're watching it in real time. So the next thing that we should discuss is transportation. So traveling on a budget can quickly, traveling can quickly eat into a huge part of your budget. Like food, you have to have it, right? You have to get around, you have to get there. So how do we get around the significant costs and expense of traveling? Well, like everything else, with a little bit of planning and smart strategies, you can significantly reduce the cost of your travel expenses and free up more funds to do the stuff that you truly want to do. But be practical and optimistic in your approach to transportation, and this will allow you to explore the world and navigate the daily life without breaking the bank. One of the most effective ways to reduce transportation costs is to embrace public transportation. So buses, trains, subways, trams are often significantly cheaper than, say, renting a car or using an Uber or even a taxi to get around. Before you can even begin your trip, you need to research the public transportation options that are available. Many cities now offer daily and weekly and monthly passes, which can provide savings compared to paying for individual rides. And utilizing public transportation not only saves you money, but it reduces your carbon footprint, which is a win for everyone. Furthermore, also traveling in the off-peak time and not traveling during rush hour, right? So you're on vacation. You have the beauty and the freedom to do things at your leisure, right? So you don't have to be out at 5 o'clock in the afternoon at rush hour when everyone's getting off of work. You don't have to go eat breakfast at 8 a.m. when everybody's going to work, right? So you can take some time, push your stuff out or push yourself up, so that way you're not getting caught in those peak travel times. One, it'll save you money and time, because you do not want to go to a city and you're spending 3 hours stuck in traffic. We're talking to you, Atlanta, right? So you can, on being on vacation, you can adjust your schedule and kind of put yourself on off-peak hours, and it'll save you a little bit of money. Because if you've ever Ubered or Lyft before, you know that traveling during certain times is going to cost you double than it would cost if you went on a non-peak time. So I would suggest, if you're able, you don't have mobility issues, for shorter distances and a little bit of exercising, consider walking. Consider walking or cycling, right? Walking is free and biking is at a minimal cost in the city, but it just provides another fantastic way to explore the city and check out your surroundings, right? Many cities are becoming increasingly pedestrian and cyclist friendly with designated bike lanes and walking lanes. And a lot of these lanes cut through some amazing parks. If you're in New York City and you cut through some of these parks or some of these lesser known parks, breathtaking, right? So Boston is another good city for that. So think about walking, but think about your shoes first, and then think about walking if you have the ability to do so. Public transportation freaks out a lot of people. And I'm going to be honest, I used to be one of those people. I still am very uncomfortable getting on a subway in New York City. I will only do that if I am with someone that knows what they're doing, right? So I was recently this year on the tube system in London, and I was with my partner who's from there, so he is very comfortable with it, although I was more comfortable on the tube system than in the New York City tube system. And I know the people who are listening from New York are like, girl, it's not that serious. But if you're from a state like I am, where we don't have a lot of public transportation, and I'm saying I'm from Atlanta, but I'm actually in the suburbs of Cobb County, and we don't have a lot of public transportation. We don't have any train systems. So anywhere in the world where I've had to go on public train systems, it's been a little bit unnerving to me. I do it and I get around just fine, and clearly I've survived. But it is jarring if you don't know how it works or where you're going, and it's stressful to get the tickets and figure out which destination and what stop is yours and if you go too far, right? So I'm kind of freaking you out, but I don't mean to. I'm saying give it a go, right? It's gonna be fine. If you get off on the wrong stop, you just get back to your next stop, right? It's even with a little bit of tension or confusion, it's still going to be so much more cheaper than getting into that Uber or that taxi, which is going to be costly. And maybe not, it'll take you less time to get there depending on what time of day and how the driver is. But try to go at non-peak times, as we discussed, and it should be fine. But I would say give walking a go, which is always a win in my book, just for sightseeing purposes, especially if you've never been to this particular place before. And then give public transportation a go. Buses, just make sure you ask questions. Always follow the rule of three, where you're asking at least three different people, right? Don't want to just ask one person who just may give you an answer and then they don't really know what they're talking about. So ask three different people, make sure you're on the right route, pay attention, take pictures of the map on your phone. This is very important. You do not want to be in a major city staring at the map. Take the picture of the map on your phone, blow it up, use your little fingers, blow it up, figure it out that way. Okay. Also, seek help from the people that work there. So saving money on transportation isn't about sacrificing comfort or convenience. It's about making smart choices and being resourceful. Embracing public transport, walking, cycling when possible, and be mindful of the extra fees. Because remember, not only are you paying the fee to Uber or taxi, but a lot of cases you're also tipping as well. This adds up. So just with a little planning and a positive attitude, you can navigate the world without emptying your wallet, and you can enjoy the journey even more so. So the next thing that I struggle with is budget-friendly packing. So I am an overpacker. I pack for everything, and I'm trying to get out of that. I run through every scenario in my head, and I'm like, it could rain, there could be a volcano explosion, there might be a tsunami. Like, I'm packing for every possible condition that may happen while I'm wherever I'm gonna be. And if it's just me, okay, maybe I can get away with it, but I have two boys and then I have a partner. And so that's a lot of suitcases, right? So traveling is great, right? We all know this, that's why you're here. It opens the door to experiences, cultures, and memories. But the excitement of exploring a new destination can quickly be overshadowed by the dread of packing. If you're like me, overpacking is common travel pitfall, leading to hefty baggage fees, aching shoulders, and the constant struggle with how much luggage you need or how much further you gotta walk, because, oh my God, I can't tell you how many times I have packed too many suitcases or one big suitcase and too many bags, and now I'm trying to navigate through the airport. I'm trying to get up, cram everything into a small air elevator, because traveling outside of the US, the elevators are so much smaller, right? So if everybody has two huge suitcases, you're most of the time going to be split up, or you're trying to walk up sets of staircases because everywhere doesn't accommodate ADA, right? So now you're lugging two large suitcases up 12 flights of stairs. So just be mindful of these travel pitfalls when you are overloading your suitcases. You can master the art of light packing. I've been doing this to the best of my ability. I think I just came off of a cruise and I think I did phenomenal with the packing. So the first step towards packing light is to challenge yourself with the what if scenario. And this is what I need to, that I'm struggling with, right? Instead of packing for every conceivable situation, just focus on versatility and necessity. Start by creating a packing list of your trip well in advance. This allows you to thoughtfully consider each item and avoid impulse additions. Consider the climate of your destination and the activities you plan to engage in. A beach vacation requires different clothing than a hiking in the mountains vacation. So tailor your list accordingly. You can lay out all of the items so you can critically assess each item to decide, will I need this? And then ask yourself, will I realistically wear this multiple times? If the answer is no, it's probably best that you just leave it behind in your closet. And okay, so next let's talk through the clothing. Choosing versatile pieces is a cornerstone of packing light. Opt for neutral colors like blacks, grays, navies, whites, beiges, things like that, which can easily be mix and match for a few chosen basics that can create multiple outfits. A simple black dress can be dressed up with some jewelry for a night out, dressed down with sandals for a casual stroll on the beach. A dark pair of jeans can be paired with a t-shirt for exploring, and then heels and a blouse for a more formal occasion. Focus on lightweight, wrinkle-resistant, and quick-drying options like a merino wool is an excellent choice for travel. It's naturally odor resistant and can be worn multiple times without needing to be washed. Synthetic fibers like nylon and polyester are also good options because of their ability to quick dry. You want to avoid bulky fabrics like jeans or corduroy, which take up a lot of space in your luggage and take forever to dry. When packing clothes, try rolling them up. So rolling saves space instead of folding them, and rolling also prevents wrinkles. You can also use packing cubes, which I do quite often, and that'll smush everything down and give you more space. And also you can compartmentalize so you can pull things out without having to empty your entire bag every time you need something. But beyond clothing, think carefully about toiletries and accessories. Travel-sized toiletries are a must, especially if you're flying. The lighter your suitcase, the better. You can either buy them prepackaged or you can decant them into little travel containers from your products that you already own. I've read that you can try like shampoo bars and conditioner bars instead of, you know, using the liquid form. I've never tried it, so I'm not gonna be for or against. You use your best judgment and see what you like. I have been trying to limit the number of shoes that I bring because shoes are so bulky, especially if you're going anywhere in the winter and you want to wear a pair of, bring a pair of boots with you. So what I do is I wear, so I'm always going to wear jeans. I'm always bringing a pair of jeans, no matter what. I don't care if I'm going on the beach vacation, I am bringing at least one pair of jeans. So, but I wear them on the plane. So I'll wear my tennis shoes, and I'll wear, or I'll wear boots, like something, whatever my heaviest options are going to be in my suitcase. That's what I'm going to wear. If I got to go somewhere where I got to bring a jacket, I'm wearing that jacket on the plane, right? Cause I want to have as much space in my suitcase as possible. So like I said, just choose a couple pieces that are versatile that you can make multiple outfits out of one. And I mean, multiple outfits out of one, and it will save you time and money, because I'm sure you guys have all heard, but airlines are now, even the premium airlines are now starting to get to where they want to charge you for your first bag. So the lighter that bag is, the better. So if you can consolidate your clothing, and also make it so that way you can leave room so you can bring things back, like souvenirs or clothes or whatever that you buy. You just want to be mindful and try smart packing. I'm also following this rule. So I'll let you guys know how it goes. But definitely, I'm definitely trying to stick to the more minimalist packing just to try to save money, because the airlines will charge you an arm and a leg if your luggage goes over that total cost. And again, for me, it's more important. I mean, not that I want to save money, so it's not more important than saving money, but I don't want to be on the back end trying to drag a suitcase that weighs half my weight up a flight of stairs or through the airport, or God forbid you have to run. Right? We have all been in a situation where we've had to run through an airport. I don't know one person that's never had to run through an airport. And I am mostly always on time. I hate being late. I'm physically uncomfortable when I'm late. So, and I have had to run through an airport. And if you're running through an airport with an 80-pound suitcase, you can hang it up. You're done. Right? So in order to just make your life a lot easier, more stress-free, and easier to get around, let's just agree to pack light. It's, you know, just use that as a rule of thumb. So another thing is flying versus driving, right? There is a lot of pros and cons to each depending on what you need to accomplish and the amount of time that you have to accomplish it. Planning a trip often involves a thrilling mix of anticipation and logistical puzzles, right? So if you're like me, you plan out everything. I have friends that fly by the seat of their pants for vacation. It actually gives me the hives. I cannot handle that personality type on vacation. I need to know what we're doing. Like, I can be loose with it, but I need you to have concepts of a plan, if you know what I'm saying, right? So one of the biggest questions that many travelers face is, should I fly or should I drive? Both options offer unique advantages and disadvantages. And the better choice often boils down to the individual circumstances and priorities. While the allure of a cross-country road trip is undeniable, the speed and the convenience of flying are equally tempting. To help you navigate through the classic travel dilemma, let's dive into some comprehensive comparison, focusing on the potentials for saving money along the way. For many, the romance of the open road is a powerful draw, but beyond the scenic vistas and spontaneous detours, driving can sometimes present a more budget-friendly option, especially for certain types of trips. So let's examine the potential cost-saving aspects of driving. The cost per mile. When you factor in the depreciation of your car, fuel costs, maintenance, and insurance, the true cost per mile of driving can vary considerably. However, for shorter trips, especially with multiple passengers, the cost per person can often be lower than the individual airline ticket. With driving, you have a certain flexibility in freedom and packing. Driving offers unparalleled flexibility. You can adjust your itinerary on a whim. You can explore hidden gems along the way. You can pack as much as you like without incurring extra baggage fees. This is particularly adventurous for families traveling with bulky items such as strollers or high chairs, wheelchairs, for an example, or individuals planning to stay an extended amount of time allows you to bring more things. You can also bring your pets, right, and not have to pay for them or their crate. So accommodation savings. While you still need to factor in accommodation costs, driving allows you to choose lodging options outside of major city centers, often resulting in significant savings. You can consider camping along the way, further reducing accommodation expenses and immersing yourself in nature. You can reduce ground transportation costs. Upon arrival at your destination, having your own car eliminates the need for expensive car rentals, taxis, or rideshare services. This can be a substantial saving, particularly for longer trips or destinations where public transportation is limited, although you do have to factor in the cost of parking at the hotel and parking garages along the way. Driving your own car offers you a certain amount of food flexibility as well, because driving allows you to pack your own food and drinks, reducing the reliance on expensive airport food, concessions, or restaurant meals along the way. This can also be a significant advantage for budget conscious travelers, especially for those with dietary restrictions or high strong preferences. So, I don't want to drive, Brandy. What are my options to save money if I want to fly, right? So, while driving can offer certain financial advantages, flying often emerges as the more economical option, especially for longer distances, for solo travelers, for those prioritizing time over cost. And here's a few examples of why. Time is money. The obvious advantage to flying is speed. A trip that would take you days to drive can be accomplished in a matter of hours in the air. This time saving can translate into real financial benefits, especially if you're taking time off from work or you need to be somewhere urgently. There are competitive airlines now. Thanks to the infiltration of budget airlines like JetBlue and Spirit, and the increased price competition, airlines can sometimes be surprisingly affordable, particularly if you look to book in advance. I would say go as far out as 6 months if you can. Now the airlines are starting to get closer to a year. So as soon as you know that you're going to be making this decision to go to a certain place, if you can, go online and start checking the flights. Traveling during off-peak season, as we discussed, and just if you can be flexible on your travel dates, that will help you save a little bit of money as well. Flying also allows you to save wear and tear on your vehicle. Long distance drive can put a significant amount of tear on your vehicles, as you know, leading to costly maintenance and repairs. Flying avoids all of these expenses. The cost of fuel is increasing, and so not having to use your own fuel, not having to worry about putting gas into a rental car or to your own car is very helpful to a lot of people. A lot of airlines also offer all-inclusive packages. So I noticed this a couple years ago. I had never really paid attention to it. I was taking a trip. I can't remember where. Oh, I know. I was taking a trip to Las Vegas, and I booked a flight on Southwest. And when I scrolled all the way down to the bottom, right before my checkout, I saw that Southwest offers vacation packages. So I didn't book it for that one, but I did end up booking it for another trip. And it was surprisingly affordable using the combination of the hotel and the flight all at one time. And they even allow you to tack on a rental car if you like. Another thing, just a quick tip, is you can also call the airlines directly. And sometimes the airlines directly have better rates than they have on their direct website or through websites like Kayak or booking.com, things like that. Just give them a call and see what deals they have. If you are not far from where the airport is, driving to the airport saves a significant amount of money to book your ticket. So, like I said, I'm in Atlanta, so I would just drive over to Hartsfield-Jackson, walk up to the Delta ticket agent, buy my ticket directly from the desk, and that saves sometimes hundreds of dollars, especially on international travel. So that is a great tip for you guys to check out if you are close to an airport. So how do you make the right trip and weigh all the factors to know what is the best decision for you? Ultimately, the decision on whether you're going to drive or fly comes down to a careful assessment of your individual circumstances and priorities, right? So some things like distance. How far are you traveling? For shorter trips, I would say under like 300 to 400 miles, driving is often more economical. For longer distances, flying becomes more attractive. How many people are you bringing with you? How many tickets are you buying, right? So are you a solo traveler? Are you traveling with a partner or a family? Because then driving may be more cost effective. The more people that are able to split the bill, split the gas, the accommodation may look a little sunnier than if one person was carrying the weight by themselves. Do you have a time restraint? How much time do you have for this trip? If time is limited, then flying is the clear winner, right? Because time is money. Your vehicle condition. Is your vehicle reliable or is it fuel efficient to get on the road? Do you want to spend money on a rental car? Does that make more sense than flying? Taking into account that on the other end of that trip, you are going to have to pay the hotel to park the car each night. You're going to have to pay parking garages anytime you go somewhere. So taking in all of these factors, does it make sense? Your travel style is important. Do you enjoy road trips? Do you like being spontaneous and adventure? Or do you just want to get to your destination as quickly and efficiently as possible? Because all of these things matter. If you do not like sitting in a car for 10 hours, if that sounds like your idea of hell, no amount of saving money is going to make you want to do that, right? So you really have to decide what your travel style is. The next thing would be your accommodation preferences. Are you comfortable camping? Are you comfortable staying in a budget-friendly hotel? Or do you need the comfort? Do you need to sacrifice somewhere else to have a place to stay that meets a higher need of comfort for you? Same goes with your baggage needs. How much luggage do you actually need to bring? Flying can be expensive if you have excessive luggage. And also airlines limit the amount of weights and the amount of luggage that you can actually store on the plane. So if you know that you're the type of person that, one, say you're going a short distance, a couple hundred miles, and you need a lot of things, driving might be the clear winner for you. With, I would say gas prices is something definitely, again, to think about. They fluctuate from year to year, month to month, state to state, right? So gas typically is cheaper in the South than it is out West and up North. So think about where you're going, and then try to factor in all of these costs to optimize your savings. No matter which mode of transportation you choose, you can book in advance to secure the most up-to-date and best deals. Travel during off-peak seasons if you can, avoiding spring and holidays. Avoiding spring break and holidays to reduce airfare and accommodation costs. Be flexible with your dates if you can. Experiment with different travel dates. And also the weather is something that I forgot to say. So off-peak seasons are typically off-peak seasons because the weather is not at its best, right? But if you don't mind a little bit of rain or a little bit of chilly weather, then you're going to find that that is the best time to travel to different cities or different countries, because the tourism rate is really low and they need the money. And so they are willing to give you the best deals. You also want to compare prices. Use online travel comparison websites from different airlines, hotels, rentals, rental car companies. And this is going to give you just an overall look of how you can get the best deal. And the best deals might not all be in one spot, and that's okay. So you might not be able to do an all-in-one booking like I previously spoke about. You may have to get your hotel from Booking or, you know, Kayak, and then you may have to get your car from somewhere else. You may have to get your airline ticket from somewhere else. Another thing about airline tickets I was going to say is, don't be afraid of the long layovers, because sometimes the longer layovers give you a cheaper ticket. And if you don't mind waiting, then accept that. Again, packing light. You're going to avoid the baggage fees and avoid having to get to the gate just for them to tell you that now you have to pay because your suitcase is overweight, or because that airline has met their max criteria and then your luggage is now too heavy. Take advantage of loyalty programs. Signing up at those airline and hotel loyalty programs, also rental car programs. It's free to sign up, and it does add up over time. If you're in a position where you can do so, get your debit card or your credit card with the loyalty points program, where they put that money they put the money in points back onto your card, so you can use your Delta miles or Sky miles, things like that, towards your purchases of your airline tickets. Look for deals and discounts. Keep your eye out for special deals and promotions. Sign up for those websites for hotels and airlines and attractions. Create a junk Gmail account if you need to, and sign up for the promotions, because they do come quite often, and they definitely start coming through when they know their off-peak seasons are coming and they want people to come to their destinations. So by carefully weighing the factors outlined above, you can employ these strategies to make an informed decision on which mode of transportation suits you best, which style of travel lodging suits you best. Whether you choose to embrace the open road or take to the skies, remember that it's important to just enjoy the journey along the way. Don't let a limited budget hold you back. Traveling the world on a shoestring is entirely possible with careful planning and diligent research, a savvy approach to spending. It's not about... Don't let a limited budget hold you back. Traveling the world on a shoestring budget is entirely possible Don't let a limited budget hold you back. Traveling the world on a shoestring budget is entirely possible with careful planning, diligent research, and a savvy approach to spending. It's about prioritizing experiences over extravagance and embracing the adventure and making your travel dreams reality. I know that it's so tempting to want to show everyone that you're doing the best, or you're going here, or you're going there, because it feels like in this day and age that everyone is doing it on social media. No one is just posting regular videos or regular family trips anymore. It's always these exotic locations and wonderful places. And I just want to stress to everyone out there that don't let that make you feel like you can't do it. Like you have to go to these amazing places and be on a yacht and just be spending your life savings to be on Instagram. I really hate saying that. And all it is, it's just people just trying to show off and make their life seem better than it is. But what it does is it makes people feel like they're lesser than, or that they can't also live those dreams. So I just wanted to let you guys know that you can travel anywhere you want. You just have to be smart. You just have to use your resources and do your research and make travel as fun of an experience that you can possibly do. It doesn't have to look like everyone else's. You don't have to go to the same places that everyone else is going to. You can have an amazing adventure on the budget that you can afford without breaking the bank. And it starts by just establishing a realistic budget that outlines exactly how much you can afford to spend, right? This will be your guiding decision moving forward into your next adventure and your next journey. It's funny because I always watch on YouTube, you know, those girls trips Miami gone wrong or whatever, and always the bottom line is one friend didn't have money to go, right? But they went anyways. So to avoid that, just travel within the budget that you can afford to travel in, and stop trying to compete with others. Stop trying to keep up with the Joneses. It's not that serious. Travel in the budget that you've laid out for yourself, and then stick to that budget. Once you've chosen your destination, timing is everything. Booking your flights and accommodations well in advance, just like we spoke about, especially during off-peak seasons or shoulder seasons, as some people call them, can lead to significant savings. Being flexible on your travel dates, prices can fluctuate dramatically depending on the day, the week, or the time of year that you choose to travel. Consider flying on weekdays and not leaving out on the weekends, or coming back on holidays. Avoid those busy, popular travel times if you can, if you're not constrained to a certain calendar. But traveling on a budget doesn't require a lot of sacrifice. It just requires you to prioritize certain things over other things. And it requires you to be flexible, and it requires you to have an open mind and communicate properly with the people that you are going on vacation with. This is my budget. This is where I can spend money. These are the things that I want to do, right? So if you have that resourceful mindset, then you can unlock the world and have incredible memories without emptying your wallet. So start planning and pack your bags and get ready for the adventure of a lifetime. And with that, guys, thank you for joining us on today's episode. I hope you found our discussion insightful and engaging. If you enjoy the show, please consider subscribing, rating, and leaving us a comment. If you don't mind, hop over on our Instagram and give us a like and a shout out and a follow. It means the world to us. We are at follow us on @outventure_podcast for updates, sneak peeks, and upcoming episodes. We appreciate your support, and we'll see you at the edge of the map.
All right, fellow explorers. That's a wrap on another OutVenture podcast episode. To keep the adventures rolling, don't forget to subscribe, follow, and give us a like on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix. Your support helps us bring even more amazing content your way. And if you're feeling that extra spark of enthusiasm, join our Patreon community for exclusive behind-the-scenes content, bonus episodes, and even the chance to win some seriously cool outdoor gear. See you at the edge of the map.